Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 153. This week, we talk with Vikas Bhatia and Sean Henry about smarter device connectivity using Project Roam. And this is definitely the most pun we've had in a long time.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Espose, the market leader of .NET and Java APIs for file business formats. Natively work with DocX, XSLX, PPT, PDF, MSG, MPP, image formats, and many more.
Now we have Vikas Bhatia and Sean Henry. Sean Henry's program manager for Project Roam from the Windows Developer Platform team. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
And apparently Taylor Swift fans as well.
Yes.
A little bit of an inside joke for the team there. So let's jump into the question. So we did record with you before, Sean. So anybody who wants, you know, kind of an in-depth background, they could go listen to 128. Otherwise, we'll kind of do a recap here. But why don't you just give us like a short version of like what is Project Roam?
Okay. So first, thank you guys for having us here. We are big fans of your show. So thank you for having us here. On Project Roam. So Project Roam is, at its very basic level, a toolkit for developers to drive user engagement across apps, across devices, and across platforms. That's the very, very short elevator pitch for it. Now, talking about the problem or opportunity, the way you look at it, what Project Roam aims to solve is this issue that we've run into as a society with all of these devices around us.
Yep.
Like right now in front of me, I see about, 16 devices. I don't know. But even for a regular person, right? Like a person has a laptop and a phone and an Xbox and, you know, TVs. And like we're constantly surrounded by devices. And we have a lot of stats around how many people have multiple devices. I won't bore you with the stats, but the short summary is everyone has a lot of devices right now. And the other important part is we are constantly switching between these devices. You know, you wake up in the morning, you check something on your phone, you have TV going on, you pair it with your phone, right? You're still looking up something. During the day, you're like 8 hours in front of a screen. But even during your day, you're still checking your phone. Earlier this morning, I was in an elevator with someone coming up to the, you know, conference, and this person was with me in the elevator for 10 seconds. In that 10 seconds, the person whips out his phone and checks something. Yep. Like, you cannot stay away from your screen.
It's like that twitch, yeah.
It's that twitch, right?
Yeah. God forbid I, like, interact with other humans.
I know, right? So, like, even in between these devices, we're constantly doing the same thing across multiple devices. We call it, like, the activity. You're doing this activity across multiple devices. And we as, you know, we have a PC and, you know, it's still a very strong and useful productive device. And you're pairing that with normally with an Android and iOS phones. And the people who do that are pretty large, right? Like in the session yesterday, we said 82% of people are doing this. Like there's a lot of people who are doing this. The problem comes to users and developers. As a user, I'm constantly switching between these devices. And each of these devices and apps, they're their own silos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? The user still has to think their lives are complex as they move between these silos. And user problem aside, developers, they already have to build their apps on all of these devices. But they lose the user engagement as the user moves between all of these devices. So, you know, a lot of people install these apps, but they don't go back to them. So user retention is a big issue. Like, let's say I'm listening to music on my phone in the car, right? And I'm coming to my office. I could listen to the same music, but I forgot.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. How do I get back into it? Or an information worker, she's working on a document at her office, and she's supposed to work on it, you know, when she gets home, but then she forgets. Like, she doesn't remember to get back into it. Developers, what they get because of Project Roam is we help you drive user engagement across apps, across devices, across platforms.
Okay, that's a great problem to solve, because I always try to avoid the issue by like having less devices. It's like, you know, which I fail horribly at, but it's like, okay, one laptop, one phone, and then I just, you know, less management.
That's the thing, is like, you know, you add more devices to your life gets more complicated. And really what we want to do, if we can make your life get less complicated as you add more devices and as you use these apps that really have, you know, make the experience of the app cross all of your devices.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about the app, not the device.
Yeah. Because you had mentioned, like, listening to music. One of the things that I do on Groove is I let the AI of Groove, I'll, like, say, I want this kind of music, and it picks out a playlist. And when I'm get from, you know, wherever I am using my phone to my desk, you know, I can't actually get that. It was an AI pick thing. It was like a one-time thing. Right. I can't jump into the rest of that playlist on the same app on my desktop. Right. But having something like Project Roam, it would be able to do that handoff. Absolutely. And then I would have that continuation, not just the playlist, but the part in this, right where I was and I paused in the song, it would pick up right there and continue. And that would just make that experience just really stick and appreciate the application so much more.
You should go check out our booth. We have a demo of Groove that does exactly that in our booth.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And even for the people at home, come and join us.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, now that we got a bit of a basis, you know, I was looking at all of the keynote announcements that there were, and underneath most of them, at least from my point of view, it seemed like Project Roam was integrated with them. So can you tell us, like, how many of these keynote features Project Roam is a part of?
Absolutely. So on day one, Satya showed the Cortana meetings scenario, where you remember that woman was driving a car and she was moving between meetings. So when she started her day listening to something on the Cortana speaker, the Invoke speaker by Harman Kardon, which is a beautiful device, by the way.
Yeah, and I want one.
And she moved
to
her... I do, but I can't. And she moved to her car. That seamless transformation, like the Project Roam runtime, device runtime, is actually running on the Invoke speaker. And that is something that, as she moves between devices, that seamless transition happened through Project Roam as the platform piece. The second example was when she came to the meeting and she was using her iPhone, she was on the call, the iPhone detected using the Project Roam proximity APIs that she's now in proximity of that meeting, and her phone turned into companion mode, right? Her app turned into companion mode. That is also using the Project Roam APIs. That was on day one. On day two was really the big showing for Project Roam. In day two, Joe Belfiore, like the best presenter ever, talked about how Windows loves all your devices. And he started off by showing how the Windows timeline, using the activity graph, really keeps the user connected as the user shifts between all the devices. So he showed a scenario where the user, Sherry, in that case, was using PowerPoint on her Surface Studio. She moved to the Surface Book. She's easily able to get back in because Cortana helped her pick up where she left off.
Yeah.
And when she moved to her Android phone, Cortana helped her by giving her a toast notification on her phone, or she goes into Cortana and now she can exactly pick up where she left off in the PowerPoint document. The one part that I'm sure developers saw in there was we drove app acquisition on Android and iOS, right? To keep the user engaged. The other scenario that Joe talked about was the cloud clipboard. You know, something that we've all done. We've sent ourselves emails of this map link, or we've forgotten what was I looking at on my PC and my phone. We've all done that. And Project Roam is that underlying platform that is the connective tissue, breaking down barriers between these devices. And these are APIs available to developers. Later on in the talk, Abularde talked about, you know, using this WPF application and how it moves on to using the Fluent Design System. And when he created that activity by Terry Ryerson, and he moved from that Android phone to the PC, and that activity showed up in the timeline, that is also using Project Roam. So Project Roam really had a pretty strong showing in the keynote. It's because, again, as Joe Belfiore said, Windows loves all your devices. Yeah. And where we are going to with Project Roam is we are building this personal operating system. Today's operating systems are focused on the device. They do a great job. an operating system's job really is to make the apps shine, to be this app model. And Andrew Klinik, our boss, talked about it in his session, The App Model Evolution, how the app model is now moving from an app model on the device to a cloud app model. And that's where Roam is evolving to, right?
And then the app model then follows you as a user, right? You're really up-leveling the OS to not be about something running on the device. It's about something that you use as a user to power these experiences and these apps across all the devices that you're using.
Yeah, some other companies will, you know, magic happens when you only buy their type of device.
Yeah.
And I love this.
I think I know what company you're talking about.
Yeah, some people might be able to, figure it out from that. But I love this approach. Like, I already have all this stuff. And guess what? It's all mismatched.
Right.
That's just what happened. I love that all happens. I did want to, so I love that part of it. So that's sort of the upper layer. And then there's this lower layer of the technology, which I'm kind of dying to ask some questions about. One thing I want to know, when you were talking about those scenarios, so like how is that happening? Because, one sort of cheater way is to just always go to the cloud and do it. But then sometimes the cloud isn't available.
Absolutely.
But you also, it's nice whenever you have a copy of it. So this whole thing is complicated. So
absolutely.
How did you guys solve that?
So the way to think about it is, Sean likes to actually put it this way, which is we think about things as, think about Roam helping developers do push continuity and pull continuity. So going back to the scenario is I've got, Groove playing on my Xbox in my house, right? And it's a great song, and anybody except Taylor Swift comes on, and I don't like that song. What I have to do today is
Wait, that doesn't make sense. you don't badmouth Taylor.
No, we don't badmouth Taylor. So anyone except Taylor Swift comes on. So normally what I have to do is if I don't like a song that's playing on my Xbox, I have to go find the Xbox controller and, go and switch to the next song. But what Project Roam lets you do is you can pull up your phone or tell the Cortana speaker to skip to the next song. So that is a push continuity. You're telling something from device A to make some action happen on device B. And behind the scenes, what's happening is developers, in order to enable this, have to do the three things, which is device discovery, discover the devices around me. And as you said, in this case, we give you the ability to discover devices in proximity and through the cloud. So by proximity, discovery through Bluetooth or through the local area network, Wi-Fi, connected network, whatever, and through the cloud using our cloud-connected services. So once you've discovered the device in the user's device graph, you can make something happen on the device. If your app is not already running, remember the launch URI async APIs we all know and love, right? We've extended that to now include the remote system object, which gives you that remote system device that you've just discovered. So now you're doing launch URI async, which could be a custom scheme or an HTTP link, onto the other device to bring your app to the foreground. Now that the app is there in the foreground or app is not running, you can use, remember, app services. So we've extended app services to now become remote device aware. So you're still doing a device discovery, doing an app service connection from device A to device B, and using value sets to pass the messages between these two devices. So that's push continuity, available through proximal APIs and through the cloud APIs.
Yeah, that's right. So and then you can move on to like pull continuity, which is really what you saw in a lot of those experiences that like Joe showed with Timeline and Cortana and Cloud Clipboard, where as your app is running, it's offering up activities to Windows, and then we can take those activities and offer them back up to the user on the right device, in the right context, and at the right time. Because that's why you saw things like Timeline is now offering you this kind of time view of things you did. And you can, tap on those cards in Timeline, and you're taken back to exactly where you left off in that document. Or again, like we talked about, Cortana can offer those back to you. And so really what the app is doing in that case is with a new API, we're introducing in the Fall Creators Update is that the app can offer us up these user activities, which are really just deep links. You know, the URIs, you know, that you've created as the application developer, that you pass to us, and then we pass back to you when we launch your application again through, you know, launch URI. We're really kind of coalescing on the URI being the deep link being this currency that we can pass around to get you back into these experiences, because it works on Windows and it works great on iOS and it works great on Android and it works great on the web as well. So you know, that's really how that pull continuity works.
Okay. So you mentioned like earlier, like the app in the cloud and understanding that, you mean like moving that app model up is, are you really talking about like the Microsoft Graph there?
Absolutely.
So yeah, you know, is that something that's like somewhat implicitly built in Rome, or yeah, do I have to work with both of them?
So let me explain that a bit. Developers know of Microsoft Graph, right? If they all don't already know, I think it's fair to explain that a bit. Microsoft Graph has been around for some time. It is it has exposed entities like the user's object, the emails, the calendar, the documents that the user has, right? These are Office objects that have been exposed through the Microsoft Graph. And if they don't already know, Microsoft Graph is this one unified endpoint, graph.microsoft.com. And once you have that unified endpoint, and it has one unified auth scheme, one unified data format screen, right? So that's what Microsoft Graph gets you, access to that data. Now, the new announcement this year is Windows is connecting to the Microsoft Graph by introducing two new entities, devices and activities. So we talked about devices. What that means is your PCs, your Xbox, your all the Windows, obviously, devices are going to be accessible to the Microsoft Graph. So if you go graph.microsoft.com/me/devices and you provide your MSA or AAD, you get back your devices.
So then I can see when I'm logged in that I have a Surface Book,
absolutely,
that I have a Surface Pro 3, and I have a work computer, and all Xbox and all of that, they just kind of are lit up in there. So,
but not just Windows devices too. Yeah. I mean, any device that you've logged in with your Azure Active Directory account or your Microsoft account, your MSA. So like if you use Office on your iPhone, now it shows up as a device in your graph.
Correct.
Same thing with Android.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
It's very powerful. Even the Invoke speaker is in the cloud, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm kind of thinking here, like if I were a developer and I didn't know about this stuff and I wanted to build like the ability to sync this data, you know, I would be probably hosting this in Azure and it would cost me a pretty penny. And it looks like I get all of this for free.
Well, I think, you know, you still want to have a hosting backend for your cloud service. And I think things like Azure App Services are really a great solution for that, or AWS, or, you know, pick your service that you want for your backend. What we're really doing with these activities is we're kind of roaming the playhead for you, that deep link, so that we can then get the user back into your app. And then you can restore your state, you know, either from your cloud service or potentially, you know, you can go reach out into the device graph and grab your state, you know, from another device and pull that over.
So it really works best when I have the combination of relying on the APIs that you guys have created, as well as integrating my own systems with
it. So let's give an example, right? So let's say you are working on a document or you're listening to a song, right? The MP3 or the DocX is still sitting in the developer's backend, in their storage. What they're telling us is the verb that the user was listening to this song. The user was working on this document. So they would provide an activity, which is a URI, as Sean said, which is a deep link into your app. So you can imagine, back to the PowerPoint example, that the user was working on, you know, onedrive.com/foo/xyz.pptx and provide a deep link into the slide, even, which is slide 5.
So then if I don't have that on my device, then I know that I have that URI to that location.
Absolutely.
I can download that behind the scenes and then load it up to slide 23 if that's what I was last working on.
Absolutely. Because what this happens is the user can get exactly back to where they were. Mm-hmm. And what we are doing with Project Rome is also one thing that developers might have realized already, is we are driving app acquisition on devices where the app may not exist, whether that's on Windows, Android, and iOS.
So the timeline app, is that using the persistent data then? I mean, where is it getting all of its data?
So the timeline app is getting that user activity payload that the developers provide to us.
Okay.
So the user will provide a URI of what the user was, and then we're going to talk about the adaptive card to make it look really beautiful. And when the user sees that, you know, that adaptive card that hooks me in visually, that this is what I was working on. There's a picture of Taylor Swift. Here's a picture of that slide that I was working on, right?
Yeah.
I can visually get back to where I was. And when they click that hyperlink, either that's a custom scheme or an HTTP URI, we launch the app, then the app gets that activation playhead that they react to in their app, and they can bring that app directly to where the user was.
Espose offers a powerful set of file management APIs with which developers can create applications, which can create, open, edit, and save the majority of popular business file formats. Their product range supports a multitude of file formats, including Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, PDF documents, OneNote, Outlook, Project, Visio files, popular image formats, and many others. Espose produces APIs for .NET, Java, and the cloud, which can be utilized in almost any modern language available today. Visit www.espose.com for a free 30-day no-limitations trial. And if you get stuck, message the friendly support team for help. All technical support is offered free of charge. Remember, if you're a lucky winner, you will receive a free developer small business license for espose.words for .NET, a powerful toolkit to work with Word documents in your applications.
So you mentioned the adaptive card. You know, that's something that is pretty new. Can you tell us, you give us a quick overview of what that is and kind of, you know, how it's best used in Project Realm?
Yeah, so adaptive cards are our new thing that we introduced, you know, this year at Build. And they're used both in Project Realm in the activity graph, but also in the bot framework, kind of in their scenarios as well. And because we had very similar problems in that we wanted to have developers specify kind of visual layouts for the UI for stuff that they want to show the user, but to have it feel natural in the native environment. So like if you're interacting with, you know, activities in timeline, they look kind of the same on timeline. They look native to iOS on iOS. They look native to Android on Android, and you'll have a material design or whatever. Same thing with bots. You know, if I'm in Skype, I want it to look like the Skype UI if I'm interacting with a bot. Mm-hmm. If I'm in, you know, another application like Kick or whatever that has bots, then I want it to look natural. So we were kind of saw this problem that, like, we wanted to have a way for developers to specify this kind of basic UI layout and then have the application that's, you know, hosting that layout, like timeline or the chat application, be able to make it look native. So that's when we introduced this adaptive card framework for those scenarios, and we've made this open source, and we've made it available so that people can use it in their own applications as well.
I think they have a domain, right? Adaptivecards.io.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So yeah, developers should definitely check out adaptivecards.io. It is such a simple concept with so much power, where you now can have a native experience for your UX to show visually where it's intended.
If you were like a UWP developer and you were generating like tiles and toasts today, and there was an XML format that you would specify for that, it's very similar. Really, you know, we've moved it to JSON because JSON's cool now, XML, you know, a little bit passe. And, you know, we've made some improvements to that as well. So really, you know, this is kind of like the successor to that. And you know, it solves a lot of the same problems.
Okay. I have a really oddly specific question. So if I have two devices that are next to each other and they're communicating, I guess, possibly over Bluetooth, and they're both offline, am I able to transfer data between them?
Well, it depends what you mean by offline, right? I mean,
yeah,
if they're not cloud connected,
right? Not cloud connected.
You know, they have to be cloud connected once because we have to register the device identity, you know, with the graph. But then, you know, we cache that identity, and if they don't have a cloud connection, you know, we can use the remote system APIs, you know, to make a connection over Bluetooth, over Wi-Fi, over the LAN as well.
I'm just thinking like offline peer-to-peer scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And one of the other things we introduced, you know, in that same space, you know, last time I was here, I talked a lot about the remote system APIs, which do kind of what we were talking about there, which allow you to make this direct push connection from one device to another, is we've introduced a new API called Remote Sessions, which is kind of like taking some of those remote system concepts and making them available across users. So like the four of us here mm-hmm. can show up, we can open up our laptops, and we can launch an app and create a shared session. And the instances of that app on all those devices can start talking to each other, and we can collaborate together. And that was kind of like that team scenario that Vikas was mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
And we've opened that up as an API to all developers. And really simple, like it's literally just a few lines of code to create these sessions and have them have this kind of shared connection between them, and you can pass data around.
And if you saw the keynote, the Cirque du Soleil,
yep,
that's right.
Where you had, you know, those three people building stuff that I will never be able to build.
Yeah.
They were using the three HoloLenses in proximity to each other. And that communication, that device discovery, that handshake, that session was actually built on Project Rome.
Oh, cool.
So, like, these APIs are going to work, you know, this is going back to, like, we're trying to break down barriers between devices.
Yeah.
Right? So now we've introduced this concept for multi-user collaboration
yeah.
in proximity, which is really powerful depending on the scenario you can think about. You can think about information worker scenarios where multiple people are working on the same thing together, editing a photograph together, editing videos together.
Games.
Editing games are yeah. a big important thing, right? So there's so many scenarios from consumer to enterprise that developers can think about, which these to build these on their own, it's hard, right? Yeah.
So
we are plumbers.
I don't want to do this stuff.
Yeah. So like one thing that just popped in my head, I want to see if this is, you know, a legit scenario. So if I want to have like some sort of discovery of another device, I could just use Project Rome instead of having to write that networking code. So if I wanted to do some Bluetooth connection to connect, you know, an Android tablet to an iPhone or something, instead of having to figure out all that network and those disparate platforms, I could use the Project Rome to make that connection, and then I can just use standard, you know, easier APIs to yeah. do the actual communication.
Not only that, I think you don't even have to go down to the Bluetooth layer.
Yeah.
You would just say discovery.proximal, discovery.cloud.
Yeah. And we'll find yeah. it. If we can see it over Bluetooth, if we can see it over the LAN, if we can see it over the cloud, just shows up, it's there. You know, we really want to abstract that from the developer so they can just focus on making their experience work really well.
That saves a ton of work.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's really the goal. Like,
that's what makes us happy
yeah.
when we save, you know, developers' work.
Yeah, I hope Kevin yeah. Gallo is listening.
So I'm going to ask you the really hard question. How do you do this on iOS?
So on iOS, to begin with, I think we should clarify.
Sure.
On iOS and Android, so actually stepping right back.
Yeah.
There is a client role and there's a host role.
Okay.
A client role is somewhere where a device initiates a connection onto a host device. So me launching something from my Android or iOS phone to a Windows device, whether that's PC, Xbox, yeah. whatever, the host role is running on the Windows device and the client role is running on the iOS or Android device.
Exactly.
That's something that's released today in preview on GitHub. The other way around, where you want to launch something from a Windows device to an Android and iOS device, is not something that's released today. That's something that we are working on pretty actively.
Okay.
So now, going into the details of how that is going to work on Android and iOS is going to be a little different, because each of these platforms do things a little differently.
Yeah.
Right? On Android.
That's an understatement.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things we looked at, we really prioritized it, you know, based on the scenarios. And if you think of, you know, often what you want to do is you have an experience on your phone, you've started on your phone,
because
yeah. it's what's convenient, it's in your pocket or it's in your hand, but then, you know, you want to move it onto your PC or onto your Xbox, onto a bigger experience. So, you know, that's where we really see a lot of these scenarios going, is, you yeah. know, they start on your phone and then they end up on your PC, and we can certainly support that.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. I mean,
plus, you want to be on Windows anyways.
Yeah, of course, right? of course. But I could see the other scenario too, where I'm walking out the door and I wanted my
exactly.
So
well,
I'm guessing,
and we do support those kind of things with the activity graph. Yeah. And what we do is we use Cortana as kind of like a host on iOS and Android to get those kind of things. So yeah, you saw in the demo, you know, Cortana will offer up on iOS, on Android, to pick up where you left off and get, you know, users back into your application.
Yeah. Plus, I assume you could do like push notifications.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, you know, that's what is happening under the covers yeah. with Cortana, as we kind of do that for you. But yeah, certainly if your application has a push notification channel,
yeah.
they can do that to get woken up as well.
Okay.
And then start the connection, you know, back the other way.
Because, you know, theoretically, like, I could I just use Project Rome? I mean, obviously, I'm using the cloud portion of it for the discovery. But I could if I'm like anti-Microsoft for whatever reason, I'm just iOS and Android or whatever, like I could still use it, right? Hypothetically?
Hypothetically, you could.
Yeah.
You would still need
Who
to...
Who wouldn't want to use Windows? I don't understand
well,
the question.
That's why it's hypothetical.
You know, we still need the user's identity, which is going to be right. MSA or AAD, right? So there still needs to be some Microsoft connection there.
Yep.
But, you know, once we have the host role on these devices...
Yeah. Okay, very cool.
So... You know, I'm just thinking of this scenario, too, especially, like, as I'm plugging into Timeline. So, you know, I may be an app developer, and I have an app on multiple platforms. But, you know, I may be looking at Timeline, and I use the app on my Android phone. And there's equivalent one on Windows. Is there a way to, like, you know, get the app and then do that, continuing on with that deep linking session?
So like starting on an iOS device and finishing.
Well, not only that, starting on an iOS device and then I don't have the app on Windows. Yeah. Is there a story for that yet?
Absolutely. I mean, that's really one of the things we want to drive. And because, you know, we can take, you know, if you're using an application on iOS and if it starts publishing into the activity graph, you know, via the MS Graphi, the REST APIs, those will show up in Timeline. And we, you know, we support across a cross-platform identity that you can specify, you know, this is my app's identity on iOS. This is the identity, the identifier for the app on Android. This is it on Windows. We can pick that up on Windows in Timeline and say, oh, this is the app, and we can go and install it for you, and we take the user, you know, through the app acquisition process, and they can just, you know, pick right up where they left off.
So, and just to drive this example home, so let's just say, you know, the thing that I mentioned earlier with Groove. So if I have Groove on my iPhone, I'm listening to a playlist, and if I didn't have that on a PC, let's just say, you know, I bought a new PC, I could click it on Timeline and it would download and then I could continue on with
exactly. You would see a little card on Timeline that says, you know, from your iPhone, and you would tap on that and we'd get Groove installed and we would launch it for you. Yeah.
That is just really awesome idea to think of that.
It's plus super powerful for developers.
Plus,
right?
As a developer, it brings more attention to my apps and gives me better usage. So absolutely. that's as a developer, that's something that I'm really excited about.
And it's just not from Android or iOS to Windows.
Yep, it's the other way around. So I could be anywhere. I could be in any of the stores, and it's making me across all of the platforms more successful.
Exactly. And again, going back to where we started, our focus is on the user. We want to keep the user engaged, keep the user productive wherever they go. And in this case, the developer does get benefits, obviously.
As a user, I don't have to figure out where in the store. I don't have to open the store. I don't have to do a search.
Exactly.
See the wrong thing in search. Like, oh, that was the wrong one.
Exactly. That's what really we think makes the idea so powerful.
And then we pass that context, too. I mean, that's the other powerful piece. You're not just dumped into the front door of the store, right? Because we have that deep link. The front door of the app story, because we have that deep link, you know, we take you back to where you were. Mm-hmm. Like in your example, you know, with Groove, you're back into the playlist that you were listening to, you know, previously.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, so like Abulade showed in the keynote yesterday, he was on his Android phone entering an order. He came to the timeline. He clicked the timeline. He went directly into the order rather than the homepage of the app.
Yeah.
And then the user has to navigate six levels deep into the order, which is... you know, not that a great user experience.
It sounds like our listeners have a lot of homework now. Come on.
Well, we think that we've really designed this, and I know that was a joke, but we really hope, and we want to hear the developers' feedback, that this is very, very simple to use. Yeah, we've done these hack fests with a bunch of first-party developers like Groove and Maps and a couple of, you know, big sort of apps on Windows. And it took them, what, 30 to 45 minutes really to get the context, do the code, see it running.
Yeah, and that included explaining it to them. So you guys, we've already done that. If you listen to the podcast, you're one step ahead.
Yeah.
So how quickly does some of this synchronization take? So if I perform an action on one device and I have the other device right there and pick it up, will I see it immediately, or is it, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's immediate, as immediate as we can get. You know, the infrastructure under the covers is based on the Windows notification system. These are the push notifications that today will send you, you know, instant messages, you know, from, you know, WhatsApp or Skype or whatever you're using, right? So very fast, very performant, works well, very efficient in terms of power for, you know, mobile devices and for, desktops as well. So, you know, very quick. I showed in my demo, in my session the other day, creating activities, and it's literally, you know, a couple seconds typically till it shows up on the other device. Yeah.
So one thing that I think would be useful for listeners to hear, this has been around since anniversary. What was the first update?
That's right, yeah, with Cortana notifications.
With Cortana. So right. If you go back to, what is the word for RS1?
Anniversary.
Yeah, in the anniversary update, we had Windows Phone notification mirroring. You guys remember that?
Yep.
You get a notification on your Windows Phone. You see it on your PC. Mm-hmm. You now have it in Android. Right? If you have Cortana installed on Android, you see a notification on Android. You see it mirrored on your PC. You reply to it from your PC. It gets sent back to your Android or Windows Phone and sends a notification. All of that is actually built on Project Roam and the activity infrastructure.
It's not a coincidence that our Android SDK was released at the same time that Cortana started lighting up that feature on Android,
yeah,
right? I mean, we're working hand in hand.
And the reason why we bring it up is we are clearly eating our own dog food,
yeah.
Right? So developers will get a platform that's really been vetted and beaten out so that it's nice and rock solid. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So how does somebody get started on this thing?
http://aka.ms/projectroam. One word, it goes to our GitHub page. You know, we decided to go with GitHub because that's where the developers go.
Yep.
And we have links to our Windows SDK samples over there. Yeah. We have links to our Android and iOS SDK. We have links to Microsoft Graph. We have links to our blogs. And we are listening, so please respond to us. I ran into a developer here earlier, and he said, "You guys responded to us like every day, like within 2 days. We are very responsive. Mm-hmm. We're listening."
What's a really important point there too is, like, you know, we are trying to go to where the developers are. So we have, you know, UWP client-side APIs, obviously, you know, on Windows that you can use. You can use a lot of those APIs as well from, you know, .NET, like Forms applications and XAML application, WPF applications. We also have native Android and iOS SDKs, so you can use, you know, Java on Android, Objective-C on iOS. And then we have bindings as well in Xamarin, so if you want to use .NET on those platforms as well. And then finally, you know, we have the MS Graph API, which is a REST endpoint. And, you know, that's, you know, if you can hit the internet, you can use those APIs, right? So really, you know, we're available everywhere that your code is. It's really, you know, really impressive.
So is there anything else that you guys can tell us about what you might be thinking about or coming up with next in regards to this project? At least that you can tell us.
Yeah, that's
say,
a, that's
say
a tough
it quietly
one.
If you don't want everybody.
That's a tough one. But I think
no one's listening to this.
No
right?
one's listening to this.
Between us.
Yeah, there's like just four of us, right? I think the important thing is we are going to continue on this journey. So, you know, Project Roam wasn't built in a day.
The naming is just so good. It just keeps working.
So it's, you know, Roam wasn't built in a day. We've been on this journey since the anniversary update. We're providing more value, and we'll keep providing more value. The developers can come back to us and talk to us on user voice. We are going to keep making these experiences better. For example, yesterday, we had released our Android SDK earlier this year. We provided Bluetooth support on Android yesterday. We're going to keep providing this in the future. We want to hear back from developers. And if things are not working or Roam is burning...
I quit.
Bazinga. let us know. We are really listening, and you know we actually want to hear these amazing scenarios that people can build. Like, as plumbers, we build pipes, and we don't know what beautiful houses people are going to build. Let us know what you're going to build, and you know we really love to help you, and you know reprioritize our backlog to do something that you want us to do.
Very cool. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show and talking about Project Roam.
Oh, thank you. We are big fans. Thank you.
So where can, if people want, where can they find you online?
http://aka.ms/projectroam.